If you have a Bible, I'd like you to open it to the book of 1 Peter, 1 Peter chapter 2, then join my heart in prayer. Father, thank you again for the privilege of opening your word this morning. Just praying, God, that you might once again speak to us. Help us to hear the voice of the Spirit that you have for us this morning. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Children can be dismissed to children's church and enjoy their time of fellowship in the lower level. Well, I got a question for you this morning. It's a question that maybe I can just, this last week, or this last month, or just any time, have you ever said to yourself, have you ever said this out loud? You ready? Here's the question. That's not fair. This week? This last week? Well, maybe it's at school, and you're doing your very best to play by the rules, right? And another student isn't playing by the rules. They don't tell the truth. They're cheating. They might be smearing you behind your back. And in so doing, they might move ahead of you in, say, the classroom or even on a sports team. And you just say, this isn't fair. Or maybe it's at the workplace and it's a boss and the boss is insecure and the boss is jealous of you and the boss begins to make some derogatory remarks on you and you sit down with your supervisor even above your boss and you find out quickly that your supervisor has listened to your boss and you don't get very good remarks on your year-end evaluation. And you say, this isn't fair. Or maybe it's something that's gone on in the political world and whatever side the aisle you're on, undoubtedly over the last few years, you're just saying, this isn't fair. Or maybe it's a divorce that a person's gone through and the judge in your opinion makes a decision that you just say, this is not fair. Or maybe it's something that's happened to you and maybe it's an illness or whatever it might be and you say, this isn't fair. Or maybe it's as simple as you were told one price on the phone, and then when the person came to install, whatever it might be, and the bill was twice as much as what the person on the phone told you, and you just said, this isn't fair. You and I know there are hundreds of possibilities in life for you to be tempted to say, that's not fair. Peter is addressing Christians who were facing severe persecution, and as we've already discovered and talked about many times, they were facing severe persecution to the extent that they had been forced to leave their homes, and they were now exiled in five different provinces. And Peter is reminding them that even in their suffering, even in their difficulties, even when life is not fair for them, that they must be faithful to their calling. Look, he is in essence saying, look, you're a small minority, right? Yes, you are considered the dregs of society. Yet in God's sight, chapter 2, verse 9, you are what? You're a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession. And God has a goal in mind for you. God has a purpose in mind. You see it there at the end of verse 9, that you may proclaim the excellency of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. You have purpose, even though life isn't being fair for you in your eyes and minds, and even though culture and society has persecuted you severely, God has a purpose for you. And if you are going to fulfill that purpose, you must remember, as we saw a few weeks ago in verse 9, you must remember that this world is not your home. You're what? Verse 11. I urge you as sojourners and exiles. This world isn't your final resting place, and therefore you must not get attached to it. And as you're trying to fulfill your mission when life isn't fair and you're suffering persecution, keep in mind, this isn't a home, but also, as you try to live the Christian life, there are all these battles and all these fronts in the Christian life, but what you need to keep focused on is this battle that goes on inside of us. What does he say, verse 11? To abstain from the passions of the flesh. You must battle, as the men on Wednesday night are talking about, the enemy within, the flesh. You must never lose sight of that battle. There's a lot of battles in the Christian life, right? But interesting, Peter says, look, you must focus in on the battle within, the passions of the flesh. And then thirdly, as you seek to keep on mission by seeking to live your life so that your life proclaims the excellency of him who called you out of darkness, and you have it in your back of your mind that, look, I'm not staying here forever. I'm just an exile stranger here, and I got to be careful. I don't get too attached to this world. And I've got to watch what's going on inside of me, the flesh. Finally, he says there, as we've looked at now several times there in verse 12, you must keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak evil against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God. And so beginning in verse 13, all the way to chapter 3 and verse 12, he focuses in on one area of their life that is crucial if they are going to live honorably amongst the highly resistant people around them that are, in this case, they're persecuting them. And that one area, as you know, we've talked about it now for 3 weeks, is what? It's submission. Submission. Christians, he said, when you think life isn't fair, your life must not be characterized by anger, bitterness, sourness, hatred, revengefulness. But instead, your life as Christians living in a world that you say is not fair, your life must be characterized by submission to those who are authority over you. Yes, verse 13, for the Lord's sake to every human institution. He ends at verse 17, honor the emperor. You must submit, you must honor even that evil emperor Nero that is burning Christians at the stake. You must submit, you must honor. If you were here last week, beginning in verse 18, servants, be subject to your masters with all respect. And he tells us who? Which masters? Not only to the good and gentle, but also to who? To the unjust. So the world doesn't need to see Christians angry at those who persecute them. What the world needs to see from Christians when life isn't fair, what the world needs to see is a reflection of Jesus, who was maligned, falsely accused, and brutally beaten on a cross. And what did Jesus do? Jesus fully submitted to the will of his Father, even to the point of being nailed to that cross. You see, what the world needs to see today from Christians in any age, but certainly in an age when we say that maybe there's extra persecution or extra suffering amongst Christians, what the world needs to see from Christians in Peter's day and in ours day is radical submission. And it's the radical submission to those that God has placed in authority over us, that God, we don't understand all the workings of God, but God has chosen to use the radical submission of God's people in times of suffering and difficulty to stir the conscience of highly resistant people to come to the saving knowledge of Jesus. And so, as I shared last Sunday at the end of that message, so right smack middle in this admonition here for believers to live in submission, because he's not done, you know, he's covered government in the workplace. And as you can see there in chapter 3, he's going to go into the home, right? He talks about wives, be subject to your own husbands. And he's going to talk about the church, how there needs to be submission in the church. But he just, and we need a break, right? Because this is so radical, right? To submit to a cruel emperor like Nero, to these were slaves, as we talked about last week, to submit to somebody that's beating you and treating you unfairly. They need a break and we need a break. This is so radical. And so what he does is he says, okay, let's take a look at the submission of Christ. And as we know, Jesus submitted to the will of the Father. And as a result of Jesus submitting to the will of the Father, as we've already described, and as you know, Jesus faced unjust suffering. And Jesus, if anybody that has ever walked this earth could have said, that's not fair, it was Jesus. Now read it with me, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 20. For what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example that you might follow in his steps. It is a gracious thing. We talked about that last week. It's grace. But notice that phrase there in verse 21, just those first few words. For to this you have been called. If you are a believer in Jesus this morning, there is a calling on your life and my life. And that calling is this, is to suffer unjustly. God has called you as a Christian to suffer unjustly. Let that sink in a little bit. God has called believers to serve him, right? God has called believers to love him. That's the great commandment. God has called believers to fellowship with him. Abide in me, John 15. God has called believers to be holy. We saw that 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 18 and 19. God has called us as believers to know the hope of our calling. But when was the last time that you thought through the calling that God has on your life to experience unjust suffering? Maybe we need to read that again, because this is so radical. Look at verse 21. For to this you have been called. God has called us as believers to experience suffering that is unjust and unfair. This truth is so foreign for a lot of reasons for us as American Christians. Number one, most of us never really experienced this, right? And also because of the way that the gospel is presented oftentimes, right? The gospel is often presented as, well, you need to come to Jesus because Jesus is going to give you a better life now, and Jesus is going to give you health, and Jesus is going to give you wealth, and Jesus is going to, you know the story, Jesus is going to give you prosperity. And if you come to Jesus, Jesus is going to give you a trouble-free life. Look, this is what, if you come to Jesus, this is what God is going to call you to experience at times unjust suffering. So I want you to go with me, hold your place there if you would, to go with me to Matthew chapter 16. Now, as we've been walking our way through 1 Peter, we have really seen a before and after picture of Peter, right? Here is Peter, as we just mentioned a few weeks ago, where he talks about be subject to every institution for the Lord's sake, you know, honor the emperor. And you know, and then we jogged our memories back to, you remember, Peter's in the garden, and there was no submission to the institutions at the time when he pulls out his little sword and cuts off the servant's ear, and you know, he didn't get it, right? That, you know, Jesus had to explain that his kingdom is not of this world, right? So we've seen the evolution, so to speak. We've watched Peter grow in his understanding of the ways of Jesus. Well, when we come here, we see that we see it as well. Because you remember back in Matthew 16, Peter had just made that great confession, verse 16, Matthew 16 and verse 16. Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Blessed are you." Remember in verse 18, "You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." And then verse 20, he strictly charged the disciples to tell no one that he was the Christ. But notice verse 21, "From that time Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and do what? Suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised." And, oh man, I hope you got an imagination, because let your imagination run wild. Verse 22, and Peter takes him aside, right? And gets him, you know, and whispers in his ear. And Peter is rebuking Jesus and said, "Jesus, you know, Jesus, are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? Far be it from you, Lord, that this shall never happen. Jesus, we're not going to let it. We're not going to let you suffer. We're not going to let anybody come and kill you," right? And Jesus, verse 23, turned and said to Peter, what? "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of men," right? I mean, obviously, Peter didn't understand the purpose and the reason why Jesus, first of all, had come to this earth. We're going to celebrate Christmas. He came to die. Jesus came to suffer, right? Peter doesn't understand that at all. And Jesus, verse 24, you can read it there. Again, this is how Jesus presented the gospel. Jesus told his disciples, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." I mean, now at the end of his life, here Peter is saying, "Jesus, you're not going to suffer. I'm going to let you suffer." Now at the end of his life, what's Peter saying there? You can read it, verse 21. "For to this you've been called," right? He gets it. To follow Jesus is not a call for a trouble-free life. If you want to honor Jesus, don't make that your goal, right? Because that's not your calling. And later in the same little letter he writes, chapter 4 and verse 12, we'll get there. He said, "Beloved, don't be surprised by the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange happened to you." And Paul, as we know, talked about this a lot in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 29. He says, "For it's been granted to you for the sake of Christ that you should not only believe in him, but also," again, Paul is saying the same thing, Peter, this is what's your calling, to suffer for his sake. Now, go back with me to verse 21. So we emphasize that a little bit. I hope that's in your mind now. "For this you have been called." Now, why? Why is this the norm? Well, he tells us, because Christ also suffered for you. Because it was through Jesus submitting to the injustices that he faced, and ultimately a wrongful death sentence on a cross, that resulted in humans having a way to have their sins forgiven and reconciled with God. He repeats that, if you have your Bibles there, just across the page, chapter 3 and verse 18. "For Christ also suffered once for sin, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh." Why are we called to this? Well, we are called to this because this is what Jesus did. Jesus suffered. Jesus went to a cross and died for us so that the unrighteous could be made righteous with God. So Peter, what he does here is he puts that on the table, but he also adds a little word there, verse 21. See, look at, "For to this you've been called, because Christ," and he puts that little word in there, "also suffered," okay? And he didn't have to add that word. He does the same thing. Look at chapter 3 and verse 18. He adds that word "also," right? He could have just said, "because Christ suffered for you." But he adds that little word in both cases because he wanted to encourage them. He wanted to comfort them that they are not alone in their suffering. Someone else suffered wrongly, and it was Jesus. And there is great comfort in knowing that we aren't the only ones. That's the point of 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. We've talked about that. Let no temptation has ever come upon a man, but such as is common to man. I mean, there's nothing that you and I will ever face in life that somebody else hasn't already experienced, right? I was thinking about this. Had to go pick up some more medicine for Barb from the pharmacist this week, and I keep on going in there and getting these drugs, and I'm beginning to wonder what they're thinking, why I'm getting all these drugs. And so the lady's giving me the drugs, and I say, "Well, my poor wife, she broke both of her wrists." And right away, the lady tells me, "You know what?" She said, "My son broke both of her wrists." And the more I've told people, did you guys know that Bruce Swinton broke both of his wrists at one time? You know, when that first happened, somebody said, "How could you break both wrists?" Well, you know what happens when you find out that more people have gone through the same thing? Well, you find comfort in that. Somebody has said it like this: shared sorrow is an endurable sorrow. And Jesus knows what they're experiencing. He knows what they're feeling, and so Peter adds that. You're not alone in your suffering. See, we don't serve a God who doesn't expect us to do something that Jesus hasn't already done. He knows everything that you and I have gone through. He's experienced everything, right? And we find comfort in that. Now notice, again, back to the verse, for this you've been called, first of all, because Jesus suffered for you, and he adds, he also suffered, for Jesus knows exactly what you're feeling, and then he says, leaving you an example that you may follow. Oh, that's great. So Jesus, Peter's telling, look, this is why you're suffering, because Jesus suffered. And just know this, that Jesus knows what you're feeling. He also suffered. But know this, Jesus gave you an example. So Jesus shows us how we are to go through those times in life where we think that life is unfair. It's interesting that word example literally means to trace with big letters. And just as kindergarten children learn how to write their ABCs by tracing over the big letters of the alphabet, right? And in the process, they learn to write their letters. Peter is saying the sufferings of Jesus are like a set of spiritual ABCs for us to trace. We are to copy Christ's example of how he suffered, leaving you an example so that you then might what? Follow in his steps. It's a picture of a child trying to walk in the footprints made by his father's feet. So in that one little verse, Peter is reminding them why they are experiencing unjust sufferings, because Jesus suffered. He's giving them comfort. Look, Jesus also, so you're not alone in this. And now he's telling them how they are to walk, the example they are to follow. So here's the example, verse 22. He, Jesus, committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. So I want you to focus that first phrase there. He committed no sin. I want to see two major ways in which Jesus suffered that we're to trace, we're to follow his example. And the first is this: Jesus suffered innocently. Jesus suffered innocently. He committed no sin. Pilate's evaluation of Jesus was true and accurate. I find no fault in him. Jesus was falsely accused, falsely charged, but Jesus was blameless and innocent. Again, back to verse 20. You remember Peter just emphasized the need to make sure that our suffering was not because of our sin. I am not tracing the example of Jesus and walking in his example if I am suffering because, or you are suffering because you're living a hypocritical lifestyle. And people call us out on that. We're not following the example of Jesus if we lack grace and mercy in the way we deal with people. We are not following the example of Jesus if we're cantankerous, or if we're being deceitful, or if we have sin in our life. Jesus was innocent. He committed no sin. And again, I think we talked about this last week, but I'll say it again. We just need to be careful as Christians about pulling out the victim card when we feel like maybe we're facing some unjust suffering and complaining how we're suffering, when in reality, maybe it's our attitude, maybe it's something about us that people are resistant to. When we think we are experiencing unjust, we need to do some soul searching, and we need to examine our own hearts. When we say that Jesus suffered innocently, we are also saying that he experienced suffering because of no wrongdoing on his part, but we are also saying that Jesus didn't sin in his suffering. How easy it is, right, to be innocent of any wrongdoing, but then when the unjust accusations come flying at us, that's then when we sin in the suffering. Jesus didn't sin in his suffering. Here's two temptations we face when we face unjust suffering. And the first is this, is the temptation for poisonous words to come out of our mouth. But notice again, verse 22, he committed no sin and neither was deceit found in his mouth. Jesus did not spew poisonous words in reaction to being treated unjustly. Jesus didn't become caustic in his speech to those who were treating him unjustly. And I think we all know where sin is most easily expressed. It is expressed through our mouths. That's why Isaiah said when he saw God, woe is me, for I am lost. And what's the first thing he said? I am a man of what? Unclean lips. And as Paul is trying to describe the sinfulness in man's heart, he says, their throat is an open grave. They use their tongues to deceive. The venom of asp is under their lips. Their mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. And when we are hurting and we believe that life isn't fair and we've been treated unjustly, the temptation is there in all of our lives is to take out this power, this thing called the tongue, and start slashing and striking those who hurt us. But that wasn't the case for Jesus. Jesus is before the council and they're spewing all kinds of false testimony and accusations against him in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 63. And we read these words, but Jesus remained silent. I was reading this morning in Mark chapter 15, I think it is, and he's before Pilate, and Pilate asked him, you know, who are you? And are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus said, yeah. And then he starts making some more statements, and Jesus didn't defend himself. Jesus didn't say anything, right? You remember the verbal abuse he faced on the cross, right? And the harsh assaults. But Jesus, verse 23, 1 Peter 2, when he was reviled, he didn't revile in return. He didn't give him a piece of his mind. He was silent. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. Here's a great question for all of us. When you feel like life isn't fair and you're being treated unjustly, do poisonous words come from your mouth, right? I mean, you're saying it inside, life isn't fair, that's not fair. I tell you what, the world does not need to see Christians spewing out poisonous, harmful, derogatory, slashing, striking words when we are not treated fairly. What the world needs to see is grace. They need to see the grace of Jesus. As Jesus, we read, there was no deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. So that's the first temptation, right? We've all been there. Open the mouth. Let him have it. But there's a second temptation that we have when we're treated unfairly, and that's the temptation to seek revenge, right? I'll keep quiet. I'll keep the tongue in there, right? but I'll get even, right? I'll make him pay. Verse 23. When he reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. He didn't threaten. He didn't in any way choose in any way to say, I'll make them pay for this. And if there's anybody that could have made them pay for it, it was Jesus, right? There was no bitterness in his heart towards these people that were treating him unjustly. Instead, he cries from the cross, what? Father, forgive them. Let me ask you a very personal question. Do you have bitterness in your heart towards someone that you believe treated you unfairly? And if you were to have to be honest with yourself, is there somewhere in your life right now, somewhere along the line, you believe you've been treated unfairly, life hasn't been fair for you, whatever it is, and somewhere, if you're to be honest within your heart, there's somebody in your heart right now that you would love to see revenge take place on them, that you would, there's bitterness there. And I found it so interesting that Hebrews shows, chapter 3, verse 13 maybe, check me out, is like where he says, as brothers, we need to be helping each other, lest any root of bitterness spring up within us. And it kind of makes sense to me now. Why does he pick that one sin of bitterness? What's the big deal about that? Well, if there's bitterness in my heart towards another person, I am surely not following the example of Jesus. And I'm not sure he's showing the forgiveness and the grace of Jesus. And I'm really pretty useless, right, as a Christian. And so I think this whole thing about when Jesus says he was reviled and he didn't return. And when he threatened and when he suffered, he didn't, what does it say there? I lost my place. He didn't threaten. When suffered, he did not threaten. Jesus suffered innocently, and in his suffering, he didn't spew poisonous words or seek any kind of revenge. And you're saying, well, that's Jesus. You know, people do that all the time. That's Jesus, and that's just human nature. I can't do that. And all these excuses, you hear them all the time. You know, that's just the way I am. And no, you can do it. And you can do it because you have the power of Jesus within you. And so the question is, well, how did Jesus do it? Well, we're told there, verse 23. When he reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. But what? He continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. Jesus suffered innocently, and Jesus trusted the judgment of God. The word continued in entrusting himself literally means to hand over, to deliver something to someone, to keep, to use, to take care of, or to manage. And what a picture. Oh man, wouldn't it be neat to, if we could have heard, I mean, we've got those seven words of Jesus on the cross, but could you imagine the conversation that's going on with Jesus and the Father? And as Jesus is experiencing the torture and the pain and the hurt on the cross, can you just imagine this handoff? Can you just imagine the cries of entrusting it to Jesus? Again, if you need a picture in your mind, it's the picture of a flooding. And obviously, you people here that lived through the flood, you know what it was like. And probably some of you maybe were on a sandbag line, and they fill the sandbag, and they pack it up and tie it in, and then they hand the sandbag, and it goes from one person to another. And that's the picture. When the unjust suffering comes to us, we don't hold on to it. Spew words and hold on to it and let it take root in our heart and become bitter. No, but we just like, we hand it off. And then 1 Peter 5, we're going to get there. He says, cast all your cares upon him, right? Because God is waiting there for us. Because God is the just judge of the earth. So when you and I experience the unjust sufferings of life, and we say life is not fair, the question is, do I trust God? Do I trust God with the injustices? Do I trust him to the point that I don't like this, I don't make sense, I don't understand it, but here it is. I commit it to you. And if you believe in the justice and the loving kindness of our God, then you will hand it off to him. But if you don't believe and you don't understand the nature and the character of the incredible God we have and his justice and his mercy, then you'll hold on to it. And you'll take matters into your own hands. Jesus handed the injustices to the Father right up to the very end, to which then he spoke those words, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Jesus gives us an example to follow. He gives us an example of what biblical submission looks like, right? Whether it be to the human institution that we don't like, whether it be to the boss that we don't like. We're going to see some more play arenas in life in which submission needs to be played out in. The question, I think, for us is this. Well, how did it work out for Jesus? How did it work out? He submitted himself to the point of dying there on the cross. Well, I'll tell you how it worked out for Jesus. He bore our sin in his body on the cross. He died in our place. His death was a substitute for my death. And as a result of Jesus entrusting the unjust suffering and submitting to it and committing himself to the Father, he provided an opportunity for his enemies, highly resistant people, people like you and me, to be reconciled with God. So the next time that you feel like saying, "Life is not fair," when you feel like you are suffering unjustly, don't try to defeat your enemy with your tongue. Or don't try to think of ways to get even. Don't become bitter in your heart, but trace the example of Jesus, knowing that God wants to use your honorable conduct to reach highly resistant people. And remember that God is still reaching highly resistible people. And God has not called me to a trouble-free life. God has called me to suffer unjustly. This is radical, and therefore I need to embrace it, and I need to submit to it. And how did it work out for Jesus? Well, he provided a way for highly resistant people like you and me to come to him. But I tell you what, when Jesus died, he went to the Father, and Jesus was exalted. God highly exalted him. And I just want to close, because God will bless you and God will bless me if we choose to follow his example and submit to unjust suffering around us. And this is what Jesus said: "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Would you stand together with me? Father, thank you for the truth. Father, it is radical. It is counterculture. And Father, it doesn't make sense from a human standpoint. But Father, we are so thankful for the example of Jesus. Father, you undoubtedly will give us some opportunities this week to follow that example. keep your word fresh in our minds, that we might commit our hearts and commit even unjust suffering to you. Thank you for the wonderful promise that you see all, and that, Father, you promise to bless those even in tough and difficult times. Help us now as we sing this closing song, and just remind us of the love that God had for us. Give us that same kind of love for the people around us this week. They need to see stuff that's radical coming from Christians, and I pray that you'll just help us to love the people around us to this extent that we'll be willing to face, even at times, unjust suffering. And so let's sing together, "Oh, How He Loves You and Me."